this?" He had captured her upturned wrist and was pointing to the small cluster of half-moons. "They look like scars." Christy Lynn jerked her hand away, tucking it between her knees. "They are." "I've never noticed them before. How'd you get them?"
She shrugged. "I don't remember. It was a long time ago."
When Wade's gaze lingered, she pushed up out of her chair. She needed to put some distance between herself and those shrewd, journalistic eyes, but Wade was soon beside her at the rail, his silhouette outlined in the thin twilight.
"Everything all right? You seem jumpy all of a sudden, like I made you uncomfortable."
"I meant what I said before, Christy Lynn. If you feel weird about the manuscript, I understand.
It's fine. I'm fine." But she couldn't meet his eyes as she said it. "And I don't feel weird. It's just, my head's so full right now."
"You've decided, haven't you? To go through with the trust?"
"Yes." She'd been wondering when he'd get around to asking. "I know you think it's a bad idea, but it feels right."
"So things are moving along."
"I've asked the attorney to draw up the paperwork. When it's ready, I'll set up some time to talk through it all with Retta." Wade had his enigmatic face on again, but she could see the wheels turning behind those amber eyes, assessing risks, weighing the what-ifs.
"Are you sure she's going to be able to handle that kind of money?"
"She won't be handling it, at least not all at one time. Peter's setting it up with me as trustee, which means the principal remains under my control, with a kind of monthly allowance being paid to Retta."
"You're sure about this?"
"No, but I'm doing it anyway. I have to." He nodded.
"I know."
Except he'd said it in a way that made Christy Lynn wonder if he really did. He told her once that he believed in clean breaks, in walking away and burning your bridges. And she had, for the most part. She'd left Clear Harbor, sold the house, opened the store, and put down roots in Sweetwater. But this was different. How did you burn a bridge when there was a child standing on it? She was still trying to come up with a response when Wade surprised her by changing the subject.
"Are you up for fireworks? If we hurry, we can get out there in time."
Christy Lynn checked her watch, but it was already too dark to read the time. "I thought they started at 9. It'll take at least 20 minutes to get downtown and find a place to park."
"Who said anything about downtown?"
"Seriously?" Christy Lynn tipped back her head. "You can actually see them from here?" Wade surprised her again by taking her hand and leading her down the deck stairs.
"Come with me."
"Where are we going?"
"Out there,"
he said, pointing toward the lake. "In the dark?" Wade stepped into the canoe and held out a hand.
"It's the best way to see them. Come on, you'll be fine."
Christy Lynn smothered a sigh. He was already seated, the paddle resting across his thighs.
"All right, but if I end up in the drink, the markup on that manuscript of yours isn't going to be pretty."
He chuckled warmly in the dark.
"I'll take my chances. Just stay low, like I showed you, and hold on to both sides."
Breath held, she stepped over the side and into the canoe. Climbing into a boat was tricky enough for a novice, but doing it in the dark was downright scary. Finally, she eased down onto the empty seat and was able to breathe again.
"This better be good." "Would I lie?"
Christy Lynn considered the question, knowing full well it had been rhetorical. And yet somehow, she knew the answer. "No," she said quietly, wishing she could make out his face in the dark.
"I don't think you would."
Wade said nothing as he pushed off and began to paddle, smooth, easy strokes that barely made a sound against the quiet. Eventually, Christy Lynn felt herself relax. She let go of the sides, gazing up into the indigo sky as they glided soundlessly over the water.
"Okay," she said grudgingly. "This is nice."
"My grandfather and I used to come out here every year for the fireworks, and for the Perseid meteor shower. There's less ambient light, so everything looks brighter."
"Sounds like you and your grandfather made a lot of great memories."
Wade stopped paddling, letting the canoe drift.
"We did.
In fact, we built this canoe together. Took us 3 summers. The old man was a stickler for detail, a real perfectionist. But 30 years later, here we are, out on the lake, watching another set of fireworks.
As if on cue, the first plumes of color erupted overhead, illuminating the night sky with a burst of red and white fire. Seconds later, a boom punctured the quiet, the percussion palpable in the heavy night air. Christy Lynn's breath caught, then caught again as a single missile arced into the darkness, followed by a profusion of pink, white, and gold that echoed like diamonds in the lake's mirror-like skin. She wanted to tell him he was right, that she'd never seen anything so wonderful. But there wasn't time. One after another, the volleys continued, each explosion bigger and brighter than the last. She barely noticed when Wade's hand closed over hers, her eyes locked on the sky, reveling in the hypnotic pulses of color and sound, flecks of gold and silver tumbling down around them like falling stars. Finally, she snuck a glance at Wade, surprised to find his attention on her rather than the sky. "You're not watching the fireworks."
"It's okay. I can see them in your eyes."
The words threw her off balance, smoky and warm, the way she imagined a shot of whiskey might feel as it snaked its way into the bloodstream. Her pulse ticked up as his fingers twined with hers, and the sky continued to explode overhead, and then he was pulling her toward him. Something fluttered in her belly, like a pair of soft wings lifting off. He was going to kiss her, and she was going to let him, because suddenly she wanted him to very badly. His mouth opened against hers with maddening slowness, a velvety assault on her long, starved senses. She stiffened briefly as his arms came around her, startled by her body's sharp and visceral response. She had nearly forgotten this part, the urgent mingling of breaths, the blending of bodies, the languid, bone-deep sense of surrender. How easy it would be to let this, whatever this was, happen, to sweep caution aside and yield to this startling new ache. It was a heady thought, and a dangerous one. She pulled back abruptly, causing the canoe to skitter. "We can't," she blurted. "I can't."
"I thought."
Christy Lynn's fingers felt bloodless as she gripped the sides of the canoe, thankful for the darkness. "I know what you thought. I must have thought it too, but I'm not. I can't."
"Did I read it wrong?"
"No, I did."
"You felt it too, then?"
Yes, she'd felt it, and for a moment, she nearly let it consume her. She glanced at the sky, empty now but for a scatter of stars. The fireworks had ended, and the quiet felt unsettling, as if all of a sudden there was nowhere to hide. "I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking."
"Apparently neither was I. I don't want to be the guy who makes a move on a friend when she's vulnerable."
His words brought her up short.
"You think I'm vulnerable?"
Even in the dark, she could sense his astonishment.
"You don't?"
"Vulnerable." It wasn't a word she liked the sound of. It was a weak word, a needy word, and she didn't want to need anyone. But now there was Wade. Strong, kind, and more than willing to be a shoulder in her time of need. How had she not seen it coming? She had gotten caught up in the moment, foolishly opening a door she wasn't remotely ready to walk through, and had nearly ruined a friendship in the bargain. "I honestly don't know what I am," she answered finally. "A mess, I suspect. But you're not that guy, Wade. This was my fault. You've been a friend, a good friend, and that's where we need to leave it." He said nothing as he reached for the paddle and turned them about. Christy Lynn was quiet too, studying the angular set of his shoulders as he maneuvered the canoe back toward shore. She had hurt him, or at the very least confused him. She should have been more careful, for both their sakes. Instead, she had chosen to ignore the danger signs that had apparently been smoldering for some time. It was Wade she had turned to for help, after all. Wade she'd wept her heart out to when she learned about Iris. Wade she felt drawn to whenever she found herself needing a shoulder. But that had to do with his connection to Stephen, didn't it? Wade wasted no time climbing out of the canoe when they reached shore, offering a brief hand as she followed clumsily. He took the deck steps two at a time, not bothering to look back as he disappeared through the open sliding glass doors. Christy Lynn was happy to lag behind, relieved to have time to rein in her emotions. The kitchen was empty when she finally stepped back into the cabin. Wade's manuscript was lying on the counter beside their empty ice cream bowls. She picked it up, along with her purse, wishing she knew what else to say. She found Wade in the living room, busily reshelving a stack of CDs. He looked up when she entered the room, his expression dark but unreadable.
Why?
She stared at him, baffled. Why what?
Why do we have to leave it there?
She sighed, wishing she could make him understand. Because we do. Because I do. I'm just getting my feet back under me, Wade. I'm not ready for complications. And that's what you'd be. I know that sounds harsh, but I've basically had one adult relationship in my life, and it didn't end well. I don't need another failure on my record. He stood with his legs braced wide apart, his arms stiff at his sides.
My feet aren't exactly firmly planted either, Christy Lynn. But there's something here. Something we both felt tonight. Maybe it's just physical. And maybe it isn't. But our paths keep crossing. Maybe that means something.
Christy Lynn clutched the manuscript to her chest, as if to shield herself from the pull of his words. You're right. There is a connection. It's there, and it's real. But it's Stephen. It's all the damage he's done, all the ways he cheated and lied and screwed us both over. That's what we have in common. My dead husband. But that's a therapy session, not a romance. I can't afford to get the two confused.
Wade folded his arms. His face suddenly closed. So where does that leave us?
She would have touched him then, if she thought she could trust herself. Instead, she reached for a smile, or what she hoped passed for one. Where we've always been, I hope. Friends.
Does that ever work, going back to being friends?
It was a kiss, Wade. We don't have to let it get weird.
Right, he said, though his nod was less than convincing. No weirdness.
Exactly. Look, I'm going to go. She held out the manuscript. I've got reading to do. He followed her to the door, hands shoved awkwardly in his pockets.
For the record, when I asked you over tonight, I wasn't planning some big seduction scene.
I know you weren't. And it might be better if we just pretend the whole thing never happened. Wade held her gaze as he pulled back the door.
I'm not sure that's going to be possible for me.
Christy Lynn said nothing as she stepped onto the porch, the memory of Wade's lips on hers still much too fresh. She wasn't sure it was going to be possible for her either. 36. Sweetwater, Virginia, July 12th. 2017. Christy Lynn flipped her pillow over, giving it another sharp punch. She'd been lying awake for nearly an hour, though this time her insomnia had nothing to do with bad dreams. Her thoughts kept returning to her upcoming trip to Riddlesville, rehearsing ways to convince Reddit to accept her help. If a check for $10,000 had spooked her, she was really going to slam on the brakes when she found out what kind of money they were talking about now. Resigned, she sat up and clicked on the bedside lamp. If she wasn't going to sleep, she might as well work. She still hadn't finished the book club flyer for the store, and her inbox was out of control. She was reaching for her laptop when she spotted the stack of pages Wade had given her more than a week ago. She had yet to touch them. Not because she'd been too busy, but because they were an awkward reminder of their impromptu kiss. Yes, she was the one who said it didn't have to get weird, and she meant it. But for a while at least, it seemed wise to keep her distance, and that included his manuscript. Not that he'd been around much since that night. In fact, he seemed to be keeping enough distance for the both of them.
But maybe that was for the best. Maybe he was right. Maybe going back to being friends really didn't work. Maybe once you crossed that line, you were either all in or all out. And if that was the case, she had no choice but to opt for all out. She couldn't deny that the temptation was there, but so was the potential for disaster. Like a parched forest and a stray bolt of lightning, the chance of conflagration was all too real. And if marriage to Stephen had taught her anything, it was that she wasn't cut out for the love and marriage paradigm. Yes, she had belonged to Stephen, legally, and perhaps even emotionally for a time. But belonging to someone and giving yourself to them were two very different things. One formed out of need, a tidy arrangement mutually beneficial to both parties, while the other involved laying yourself bare, something she'd never been very good at. She eyed the manuscript again with a lingering pang of guilt, then grabbed her laptop. She'd get around to it, eventually. But for now, she was playing it safe. She went to her inbox first, pleasantly surprised to find a request from Kimberly Ward, a women's fiction author, inquiring about a possible signing for her debut novel. She had included several links, one of which took her to the author's website. A pretty redhead smiled back at her from the landing page, a 30-something with long copper hair and a dusting of freckles across the bridge of her nose. Her bio was brief but friendly, a mother of two boys and two tricolor Shelties, a lifelong native of Beaufort, South Carolina, a southern-lit junkie who'd cut her teeth on The Prince of Tides and To Kill a Mockingbird. Christy Lynn liked her already. But it was the montage of photos on the About Me page that intrigued her most. Ancient oaks dripping with silver-blue moss, historic downtown streets lined with palmettos, a sliver of sun sinking into gilded water. It was all so lovely, so charmingly old South. And yet it was nothing like the South Carolina she'd grown up in. Without warning, Charlene Parker's face drifted into her head. Not the stitched-up ruin she had glimpsed that last night at the hospital, but the face of the woman she'd been before the drugs and booze had taken hold. She'd heard from her only once in 20 years. A phone call, out of the blue 6 or 7 years back. And then nothing. Whether she was still alive was anyone's guess. Women like Charlene Parker, who engaged in what psychologists referred to as high-risk behaviors, had a habit of dying young. On impulse, Christy Lynn opened a new window and typed the words People Finder into the search bar. When a list of sites popped up, she clicked the first one and typed in her mother's name, birth date, and last known city and state. The screen blinked, then popped up with a list of names and addresses. And there she was, third down on the list. Charlene Kendra Parker, 1710 Proctor Avenue, apartment 13, Walterboro, South Carolina. Last reported at the given address 7 months ago. Alive then, after all these years. There was no phone number listed, but that was hardly a surprise. When times got tough, which they always did, the phone had always been the first thing to go. Not that Christy Lynn would have used a number if there had been one. After so many years, so much anger and resentment, what was there to say? But the answer came back almost before the question had formed. There was plenty to say. Plenty of blame to lay. Plenty of fingers to point. And maybe some of those fingers would be pointed back at her. For the kind of daughter she'd been. The kind who left a mother in trouble and never looked back. 5 hours. 6 at most. She could make the trip in a day. But why? There was no way of knowing if she was even still there. And what if she was? There was no way to patch it up now. No way to fill the empty places Charlene Parker's brand of motherhood had carved out in her. And yet she found herself opening the drawer of the nightstand, reaching for the familiar dog-eared envelope. Dar's words rose like a specter. Let the memories catch up to you. Except she didn't want to let them catch up. Not tonight. Maybe not ever. Instead of opening the envelope, she dropped it back into the drawer. She'd been doing just fine keeping her past under lock and key. Okay, maybe not fine, but she was managing.
she saw no need to relive it all again. Once had been quite enough. 37. Clear Harbor, Maine, March 12, 2011. Christy Lynn is walking through the door with an armload of groceries when she hears the phone ringing. After dumping the bags on the counter, she reaches for the phone. The caller ID displays an 843 area code. South Carolina. Her stomach clenches. Hello? There's a brief silence and then, sorry, wrong number. The voice is familiar, unnerving after more than 10 years. The voice of a ghost. Mama? She can hear breathing over the line, and in the background what sounds like The Price is Right. Her mother had always loved The Price is Right. Mama, is that you? There's the sound of a lighter flicking, the pull of breath, the release of smoke. You sound different, Charlene Parker says finally. All Yankee-fied. Christy Lynn's legs feel bloodless as she sags against the chilly granite countertop. How did you get this number? Charlene ignores the question. I was glad to hear about your marriage. And to a real up-and-comer, too. Looks like my baby girl's landed herself in high cotton. But then I always knew you would. You were always so smart. So good. Christy Lynn doesn't ask how she knows about Stephen. The publicity photos had made the usual rounds. She remains quiet for a time, letting her mother's words hang between them on the line. Was it sadness she heard? Bitterness? Accusation? The number, Mama. How did you get it? Some woman named Sandra, at your old job. I told her there was a family emergency, and I needed to get in touch with you as soon as possible. Christy Lynn smothers a groan. Why did you need to get in touch with me? Oh, a bit of trouble, you know? Yes, she knew. What kind of trouble? I'm a little bit short, sweetie. I still owe last month's rent. Dave says the car needs some kind of pump, and I lost my job at the Quick Stop. Christy Lynn is about to ask who Dave is and why she lost her job, but decides she doesn't want to know. How short? They're saying $400 for the pump thingy. But there's the rent, too. There's a pause, the rasp of smoke being exhaled. I know it's a lot, sweetie, but a grand would really get me back on my feet, and then I promise I won't bother you again. $1,000. Christy Lynn closes her eyes, forcing herself to take slow, even breaths. It's a small price to get her off the phone and back out of her life. Where should I send it? Charlene rattles off an address somewhere in Walterboro. Christy Lynn jots it down on the notepad she keeps on the fridge. Thank you. Her voice seems to wobble, and there's a long pause. Are you happy, baby girl? Yes, Christy Lynn tells her. Her voice is clipped, almost defiant. Yes, I am. It occurs to her as she doodles a sad face on the notepad that she should ask her mother the same. But the truth is, she isn't sure she can bear the details. I'll mail the check today, she says instead. It should be there in a few days. Thank you, baby. It's little more than a whisper, thready and desperate. Thank you so much. And then, abruptly, the line is dead. Christy Lynn stares at the phone, and for a moment, the old guilt rears its head. Would things have gone differently for Charlene Parker if her daughter hadn't deserted her? It's hard to imagine. If those terrible years had taught her anything, it was that time didn't change women like her mother. It merely hastened their decline. Still, the question lingered. Could she have made a difference? She drops the phone into its cradle and goes to her purse to find her checkbook. Her hand shakes as she makes it out. $3,000. It's more than her mother asked for. But guilt has a way of making people generous. She drops the checkbook back in her purse. It's her personal checkbook, of course. There's no reason for Stephen to know about the call. As far as he knows, her mother is dead. And until a few moments ago, she had assumed the same. 38. Sweetwater, Virginia, July 19th, 2017. Christy Lynn propped her feet up on an unopened carton of books, eyeing the stack of papers awaiting her attention. There were invoices to pay, next week's schedule to finish, and the back-to-school sale to plan. But at the moment, she was too distracted to tackle any of it. She had green-lighted the trust paperwork with Peter Hagen 6 days ago. At the time, he had promised they would be ready in a week, two at the most. Now he was saying it was looking more like three. Something about needing more time to make sure the necessary safeguards against abuse were in place. She appreciated his diligence on her behalf, but in the meantime, her life seemed to have slipped into a kind of limbo, her thoughts consumed with the logistics of the thing. She never imagined giving money away could be so complicated. And there was still Retta to convince. Despite their complicated and inexplicable ties, they were little more than strangers. And here she was, the well-heeled widow preparing to swoop in like some kind of Lady Bountiful. Would Retta think the offer presumptuous? See it as meddling in something that was none of her business? Both were not only possible, but likely. She had planned to broach the subject with the paperwork in front of her, hoping that laying it all out in black and white would help put Retta at ease. But she wasn't sure she wanted to wait 3 weeks. She'd seen firsthand how stubborn the woman could be when it came to accepting help. Perhaps it would be wise to reach out now and get her used to the idea. Christy Lynn reached for her cell, pulled up Retta's new number, and hit send. Retta's voice came wheezing over the line after three rings. Hello? She sounded tired and almost startled, as if she was surprised the phone had rung at all, which Christy Lynn guessed it rarely did. Retta, it's Christy Lynn. Are you all right? You don't sound well.
Just winded is all. Is anything wrong?
No, nothing's wrong. I was just wondering if you were going to be home this weekend. There's something I'd like to discuss with you.
The television was on in the background, a talk show with lots of hooting and applause. Retta raised her voice over the din.
Are you sure there's nothing wrong?
Yes, I'm sure. I just have something. I have an idea I'd like to talk to you about. A way I think we can both help Iris. But I'd like to do it in person if possible.
I could come on Saturday. Well, I've got nowhere to go, so that would be fine. But I hate for you to drive all that way.
I don't mind, really. It's a little complicated, and I think it would be better if we talked about it face to face. Would that be all right?
Well, yes, I guess so.
She sounded confused, perhaps even leery. It's a good thing, Retta, I promise. I'll see you on Saturday.
Christy Lynn was tossing her phone back into her purse, pleased to have at least gotten the ball rolling, when she realized she had made plans to go out of town without a thought to store coverage. She was going to have to ask Tamara for a favor. Tamara was behind the cafe counter, brewing an espresso, when Christy Lynn stepped out of the back room. She looked up, smiling sunnily across the pickup counter.
What's up, boss?
I need a favor.
One of my spectacular triple shot lattes?
No, I don't need coffee. I'm in a jam. I have to go out of town Saturday, and I was hoping you could close with Aileen. I hate to spring it on you last minute, but it's important. Tamara disappeared briefly to deliver her espresso, then quickly reappeared.
No worries. Do what you have to do. Wait, don't go. You skipped lunch. At least let me make you a latte.
Thank you. You're a lifesaver. But only a single shot in the latte? She was tidying napkin stacks and coffee stirrers, waiting for Tamara to finish brewing her latte, when she spotted Wade standing in the order line.
It was the first time she'd seen him since the fireworks in the boat. God, that sounded bad. Maybe she'd just wait in the back room.
Christy Lynn.
Too late. Oh, hey! Christy Lynn pasted on a smile, scrambling for something to say. I didn't see you there. Sorry, it's been a crazy day. Well, a crazy couple of weeks, actually. She paused to throw in a laugh. It came out sounding forced and slightly deranged. I'm still trying to get the book club organized and line up events for the fall. I feel like all I do is work. It's crazy, crazy. Wade nodded knowingly.
I know what you mean. I've been crazy busy myself. I just popped in to grab coffee, and then I'm on my way to Harmon's for some 2x4s. I've been working on the deck, replacing some rotted wood. Then I'll have to restain it all. Hopefully the weather holds.
Christy Lynn was still nodding when Wade's words ran out. There was a gaping moment of quiet, the awkward abyss that descends when two people run out of small talk. So much for it not getting weird.
Here you go, boss,
Tamara said mischievously, as she pushed an oversized mug across the counter.
Steamy and hot, just the way you like it.
Christy Lynn shot Tamara her best scary boss face, but Tamara wasn't finished making mischief. Smiling sweetly, she set a mug of freshly brewed Sumatra on the counter.
And here's your coffee, Wade. One sugar already in.
I believe Wade wanted his coffee to go, Tamara, Christy Lynn pointed out tightly, though she was sure Tamara already knew this. Wade stepped in, grabbing the mug before Tamara could retrieve it.
No, it's okay. I can hang out a minute if you're going to sit.
Christy Lynn had no choice but to follow Wade to his usual table. To make an excuse and slink away wouldn't just be rude, it would be glaringly transparent. She just hoped he didn't ask about the manuscript. She didn't want to tell him she hadn't even picked it up, or to lie about why.
So, you're going out of town, he said, as soon as they were seated. I couldn't help overhearing you talking to Tamara. Anywhere fun?
Christy Lynn narrowed her gaze at him. Certainly he knew exactly where she was going and why. I have an appointment to see Retta. The paperwork isn't finalized yet, but I thought I'd drive over on Saturday and see what she thinks. Wade lowered his mug, brows raised.
Sounds like you're pretty optimistic if the lawyer's already drawing up the papers. Have you considered that there could be some pushback from the family?
It's Retta I'm worried about convincing, not the family. And why should they push back? I'm giving money away, not asking for it.
People are funny when it comes to money. Not everyone's keen on taking a handout.
Except that's not what this is. The money already belongs to Iris. I'm just making it legal.
You don't have to convince me. I'm just asking the question. I'm curious about where the grandson will stand on all this.
At the mention of Ray Rawlings, Christy Lynn felt her face go hot. I don't care where he stands. Iris is the one I care about. And Retta. As soon as the documents are drawn up, the lawyer will send her a copy to look over. When I'm sure she understands everything, we'll sign the papers. After that, the funds will be released. I know she hasn't said yes yet, but she will. I'm determined to make her see that this is the best thing for everyone.
Does that include you?
The question seemed to come out of left field. Not just the words, but the way he'd said them, as if he knew something she didn't. I don't really have anything to do with it.
I think we both know that's not true. From the moment you laid eyes on that girl, you've been consumed. It's like you think by fixing this, you can fix all the other stuff.
Christy Lynn felt her hackles rise. What other stuff?
Stephen cheating on you? Stephen lying to you? This crazy idea that it's all your fault? Or maybe it's something else. I just know this isn't some casual cause for you. Something's going on, and I'm not even sure you know what it is.
She was silent a moment, sipping her latte. Of course something was going on. Every time she looked at Iris, she saw herself. The child she'd been trying to outrun for years, reflected back in sharp, heart-rending fragments. A selfish, emotionally absent mother, the grim sense of uncertainty. A childhood on the brink of collapse.
Can't it just be about doing the right thing? She said finally. About helping because I can?
Yes, it can be. But I don't think it is. And I don't think you do either. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying, don't pretend it's not a big deal when it obviously is. You're probably the kindest, most generous person I've ever met. But this isn't just kindness.
What is it then?
I don't know.
His voice was gentle, thoughtful.
Something else. Penance, maybe. Or atonement.
Atonement. He let out a sigh.
Okay, maybe that's not the right word either. But I see you shutting down, keeping everything and everyone at arm's length. Except this little girl.
Christy Lynn peered over one shoulder, making sure Tamara was out of earshot. So this is about the other night? About what happened in the boat?
No, he countered defensively. Okay, maybe, but not the way you think. I know what it looks like when someone's pushing the whole world away, and how much you can lose while you're doing it. And yes, I know I sound preachy right now, but this isn't about me and what I want. It's about you. Do you even know what you want?
The question made Christy Lynn squirm. Yes, she knew what she wanted. She wanted to go back, to clean it all up, to rewrite her story without all the dark parts, to unknow the things she knew, to unsee the things she'd seen, to live without her memories, her shame, her regret. And maybe that was a kind of atonement after all. But none of those things were possible.
Christy Lynn?
Her head came up sharply. Wade was still staring, still waiting. Hmm?
I asked if you knew what you wanted.
Christy Lynn reached for her latte, sipping slowly as she fumbled for an answer. In the end, she decided the best she could hope for was a change of subject. Well, I could use someone to cat-sit while I'm out of town. Interested? Wade's brows shot up.
Did you say cat-sit?
It's only 2 days, but I've never left him alone before. I don't want him to feel abandoned, and the two of you did seem to hit it off. Wade seemed to be holding his breath, as if searching for a way to steer the conversation back to more serious matters. Finally, he let out a resigned sigh.
Sure, I'll be your cat-sitter.
His response caught her off guard. Seriously?
Why not? No diapers, no cooking. How hard can it be?
It's just Saturday and Sunday, and I'll leave food down and everything. All he'll need is someone to check his food and give him a little pet for reassurance. Wade emptied his mug and set it down with a grin.
I told you, animals have a thing for me. It's the grown-ups I can't seem to win over.
Something caught in her throat, a protest or an admission. She wasn't sure which.
Wade, go to West Virginia, he said softly, cutting her off.
Thank you. I'll leave a spare key with Tamara.
Do me a favor.
She smiled, feeling shy suddenly. Was he flirting?
Was she?
Well, you're watching my cat, so I guess I owe you one. God, she was flirting.
Come back safe.
And now he was flirting back, all scruffy smile and brooding charm, like one of those guys on the Hallmark Channel. This had to stop. This had to stop right now. And yet, she was still smiling as she pushed back from the table and stood. All right, I can do that. 39. Riddlesville, West Virginia, July 23rd, 2017. Retta pressed a hand to her lips, papery lids clenched tight. Across the kitchen table, Christy Lynn waited for the moment to pass, pretending not to notice Iris, standing in the doorway, clutching her tattered teddy bear for dear life. Several moments passed before Retta managed to find her composure.
I don't know what to say. Are you sure about this? It's so much.
Christy Lynn smiled. It had taken more than 2 hours to explain the ins and outs of what she was proposing, but Retta finally seemed to be warming to the idea.
Yes, I'm sure. Stephen should have taken care of this when Iris was born, but he didn't, so I'm doing it for him.
But it's your money now. Legally, it belongs to you.
Look at me, Retta. Christy Lynn waited until Retta's hazy blue eyes lifted to hers. I want to do it. In fact, I need to.
Why?
Christy Lynn thought back to her conversation with Wade, to his theories about penance and atonement, about her trying to fix the past. But whose past? Hers? Stephen's? Or was this about Charlene Parker, who, like Honey, had turned her back on her daughter? Perhaps Wade had been closer to the mark than she wanted to admit. My reasons aren't important, Retta. But Iris is. We agree on that, don't we? Retta nodded mutely. Then you're saying yes? You'll let me do this for you? Retta nodded again, with a little gulp, then buried her face in her hands. Iris was instantly at her side, a tiny arm wound around Retta's neck.
Nani, don't cry.
Retta sniffed loudly and managed to smile.
Nani's fine, baby. Sometimes grown-ups cry when they're happy. That's what I'm doing. I'm crying because I'm happy.
Iris shifted her gaze to Christy Lynn, and then back again, clearly perplexed. Retta took hold of her shoulders, turning her to face Christy Lynn squarely.
You remember Miss Christy Lynn, don't you? You liked her so much you gave her a fish, and she put it on her icebox.
Iris nodded almost dreamily.
And now she's come back to do something nice for you. Like an angel sent from heaven. Can you tell her thank you?
Christy Lynn dropped her eyes uncomfortably. She wasn't an angel. She was merely trying to right a wrong. But Iris had clearly taken her great-grandmother's words to heart. Hesitant at first, she broke from Retta's side, eyes lowered as she approached. And then, with a shy smile, she laid her teddy bear in Christy Lynn's lap. She was gone in an instant, scurrying from the kitchen in her stockinged feet. Christy Lynn met Retta's eyes. They were moist again.
She likes you, Retta said softly, her voice full of emotion.
Christy Lynn dipped her head. I like her too, and she deserves a good life. Hopefully this trust will help give her one. Retta shook her head, dashing away a tear with the back of her hand.
I don't know how to thank you for your generosity. After what Honey did, I can't imagine what would make you want to help her little girl. But I can't find it in my heart to say no. Things have been so hard, and now
they'll be better. Retta looked down at her hands, studying nicotine-stained nails.
Yes, she said, as if trying to convince herself. They'll be better.
You'll be able to afford a new house, one with lots more room and a yard for Iris to play in. It would be nice to be closer to town, don't you think, and not be so far away from everything? And I can help you look for a good school when it's time.
School, Retta said,
as if rolling the idea around in her head for the first time.
I'd like her to go to a good school. To make something of herself someday.
Christy Lynn was hesitant to bring up another matter, but at some point, Retta's health, or lack of it, was going to become a factor.
I'd like to help in other ways, too, if you'll let me. I'd like to try to find you a new doctor, a pulmonary specialist who might be able to help you breathe better and feel better.
Retta abandoned the study of her hands, meeting Christy Lynn's gaze head-on.
No need for all that. My doctor's no specialist, but he knows what's what. Can't erase 50 years of cigarettes, any more than you can erase any of my other mistakes. But there is something else you could do for me. For us.
What's that?
Take us to the cemetery.
Christy Lynn blinked at her uneasily.
The cemetery? Iris didn't go when her mama was buried. No one did but me. Ray didn't want his sister buried at his church. He paid to have her shipped home, and for the box and marker, but there wasn't a funeral. I just buried her at the cemetery on the edge of town like he told me to. Hardly anyone goes there anymore.
And you want me to take you there now? With Iris?
It's the dreams, Retta said, with a hitch in her voice. They're so hard on her. Started right after the accident. Honey, calling her name.
A cold prickle traced its way down Christy Lynn's spine. She can hear her?
Retta nodded ruefully. Claims to. Poor thing wakes up in a panic. And then she's looking all over the house, trying to find her mama. I've tried explaining that she's with the angels, but she doesn't understand that. Or that honey's never coming back. I thought if she saw the grave.
Christy Lynn's loathing for Ray Rawlings ticked up a notch when she pulled through the sagging chain-link gates and saw the sign for Green Meadows. It was a stunning misrepresentation of what lay before them. Perhaps there had been grass once, to make it green and meadow-like, but at the moment, it was nothing but a treeless patch of dun-colored ground, studded with listing headstones, and an assortment of dead leaves and blown trash. What kind of man would bury a dog in such a place, let alone a sister? Retta pointed to the northeast corner of the cemetery.
She's at the back, out of the way.
Christy Lynn followed the pocked ribbon of pavement until it ran out, then parked the rover and went around to help Retta unfasten her seatbelt and climb down. By the time her feet touched the ground, she was wheezing openly, her lips faintly blue.
Maybe this isn't such a good idea, Christy Lynn said, eyeing her dubiously. Maybe not, but it needs doing.
In the back seat, Iris sat clutching her teddy, her tiny brow knitted in confusion.
Retta pulled open the door and held out a hand. Come on, baby girl. There's something Nani needs to show you.
Iris scrambled from her car seat and took Retta's hand. Christy Lynn felt awkward suddenly and hung back, content to watch from a distance. But Iris had other ideas, thrusting a tiny hand at her.
Come too?
Christy Lynn swallowed her protest. When a 3-year-old held out her hand, you took it. They walked about 20 yards, over crackling dead leaves and sun-bleached weeds, to a small marker tucked back near the corner of the fence. The headstone was a plain one, the simple slab of granite glaringly new beside its dingy neighbors. The inscription was plain, conspicuous in its lack of endearments. Honey Rose Rawlings, November 19, 1991, to November 19, 2016. Christy Lynn stared at the dates with a pang of realization. She died on her birthday. Retta nodded, her weathered face somber.
25.
She reached out then, grasping the top of the headstone, though whether out of grief or a need for support, Christy Lynn couldn't say.
I saw her a few days before. She said Stephen was taking her somewhere special. Foolish girl.
The heartache behind the words was unmistakable, but her eyes were surprisingly dry as she turned to Iris.
Come here, baby. I want to talk to you about your mama.
Christy Lynn took several steps back as Iris moved to Retta's side, giving them some space. It was hard to imagine feeling more out of place than she did at that moment. She had never considered where Stephen's lover might be buried, or what her funeral might have been like, that somewhere in the world family and friends might have mourned her. Except no one really had. Her thoughts drifted to Stephen's memorial, to the call she had received about how to proceed in light of the fact that almost no one had shown up, including her. Apparently both Honey and Stephen had departed the world uncelebrated and unmourned. A bit of movement suddenly caught her eye. She glanced up to find Retta back at her side, her cheeks blanched of color and slick with tears.
She understands now, I think, Retta said hoarsely. She knows her mama isn't coming back.
Christy Lynn nodded, not sure how to respond. She turned to look at Iris, still standing in front of Honey's grave, her blonde head lowered. The sight made her throat go tight. Is she going to be all right? Rhett sighed, a rattling, phlegmy sound.
I hope so. I told her she could talk to Honey anytime she wanted, that all she had to do was talk to the angels, and they'd make sure her mama could hear her. That's what she's doing now, talking to the angels. Would you stay with her? I said she could stay as long as she needs to. But I'm afraid this trip has taken it out of me.
Can you make it back to the car on your own?
I'll be fine. Just stay with her.
She watched as Rhett picked her way through the weeds on her way back to the Rover, already fumbling in her dress pocket for the pack of cigarettes she kept there. Christy Lynn didn't realize Iris was approaching until she felt the air stir behind her.
Mama's with the angels, she lisped softly. She's not coming back.
No, Christy Lynn managed thickly. She isn't. Iris said nothing for a time, looking up thoughtfully, with one eye squinted. And then, before Christy Lynn realized what was happening, Iris's hand had stolen into hers, fingers small and slight weaving with her own.
Nani says, you're my angel. She says Mama sent you.
Christy Lynn stared down at Stephen's daughter, so beautiful and sad, I could think of nothing to say. It was the longest string of words she'd ever heard her speak, and she felt each one like a knife. She wasn't an angel, not Iris's or anyone else's. But how did she say that to a child? To this child, who'd just been told otherwise. She looked away, clearing her throat. I should take you home now. And then I have to go home myself. Iris's chin began to quiver.
Will you come back?
Yes, in a few weeks.
Promise?
Christy Lynn swallowed past the jagged place in her throat as she stared at their entwined fingers and remembered Retta's words.
She never knows who's coming back and who's not.
Yes, honey. I promise. 40. Tolstoy made a beeline for Christy Lynn the moment she stepped through the door, squalling balefully in what she suspected was a scolding for leaving him for 2 days. She abandoned her bags and bent to pick him up, snuggling him against her cheek. It was nice having someone to come home to, even if that someone did have 4 legs and a tail. He protested when she put him down and nearly tripped her twice as she made her way to the kitchen. As she rounded the corner, she felt something soft and squishy beneath her shoe. A tentative inspection revealed a gray felt mouse with a feather for a tail, obviously a present from Wade. There was another under the kitchen table, and a third lodged under the fridge door. She gathered them up and deposited them at Tolstoy's feet. Looks like someone has an admirer. She watched him for a moment, batting the toys about, then turned to grab a bottled water from the fridge. She had to squint to read the handwritten note tacked up beside Iris's fish.
Check the microwave. I thought I'd give you a second chance since you missed out last time. Welcome home.
Curious, she opened the microwave to discover a plastic leftover container. She found herself smiling as she peeled back the lid, delighted by the mingled aromas of tomato sauce and Italian herbs. Spaghetti. The man was full of surprises. In the living room, she retrieved her cell from her purse and pulled up Wade's number.
You're home,
he said, in lieu of hello, as if he were simply picking up the thread of their last conversation. She found it strangely comforting. Yes, I'm home, safe and sound, as promised.
How was it?
Christy Lynn pulled in a breath, then let it out slowly. Emotional.
But you got Rhett to agree.
After 2 hours of arm twisting, yes. I still don't think she's grasped how much this is going to change their lives.
No second thoughts.
About the trust? No. About everything else? She let the rest dangle, not sure she wanted to go there with Wade. He had warned her after all.
What's everything else?
Nothing, really. It's just that I'm starting to see that I'm going to need to be more involved than I thought, at least in the beginning. There's so much they both need, so many details to take care of, and I'm not sure Retta's up to handling it by herself. She doesn't even have transportation. She asked me to take her and Iris to the cemetery to see Honey's grave.
And did you?
Christy Lynn held her breath a moment. She hadn't meant to tell him about the cemetery, but it was out now. What else could I do? Wade was quiet for a moment, as if weighing his next words very carefully. Christy Lynn braced for an, "I told you so." Instead, he surprised her by changing the subject.
You sound tired.
It's been a long 2 days. I'm going to eat your spaghetti, and then I'm going to take a long hot bath and climb into bed. And thank you, by the way. That was thoughtful.
Get some rest. I'll drop the key by tomorrow.
After dinner, which turned out to be delicious, she filled the tub and indulged in a long hot soak, then crawled between the sheets with the latest Barbara Claypole White novel. All she wanted at the moment was to lose herself in someone else's story and not think about the tangle of emotions she'd brought back with her from West Virginia. She was reaching for the crisp new novel when she saw Wade's manuscript, still untouched and gathering dust on the nightstand. She picked it up, propping the stack of unbound pages against her knees, and began to read. Not because she felt guilty, but because she was suddenly curious about the man who bought mouse toys for her cat and left homemade spaghetti in her microwave. It was 2 a.m. when she finally forced herself to set the manuscript aside, her eyes too tired to focus on one more sentence. She was only halfway through the stack, but had already scribbled several pages of notes. The End of Known Things had the potential to be a beautiful story of growth and redemption. The premise was largely sound, and the prose was gorgeous, woven in a way that managed to feel both lush and spare. It was his main character, Vance, that was the problem. Midway through the second act, he had simply fallen flat, as if Wade had suddenly forgotten who he was writing about, or had never known to begin with. It wasn't a fatal flaw, or even serious, as long as he was willing to work on it. But as she flicked off the light and slid under the covers, she couldn't help wondering what had caused the sudden rift in Wade's writing. Perhaps he'd simply lost touch with the story he'd started 20 years ago. A lot could happen to a person in 20 years, and from what he'd told her, a lot had. A career ended, a love lost. Was it possible that in closing the door on that part of his life, he'd also closed the door on his creativity? It wasn't hard to imagine. There was certainly plenty in her own past that she was reluctant to look at, because looking made it real. Christy Lynn was returning from lunch with Missy and Dar when she saw Wade's Jeep parked outside the store. She found him in the cafe, seated at his usual table, banging away at his laptop. "Looks like you're on a roll." Wade pecked out a few more words, then looked up and smiled. "Hey, you. I came to drop off your key." Something about that smile, all white teeth and scruffy jaw, always took her by surprise. He was the only man she'd ever met who could leave the house without shaving or combing his hair and still look like he was ready for a GQ photo shoot. "Sorry, I ran out to meet Missy for lunch." Wade fished the key from his shirt pocket and handed it to her.
"No worries. I got some work done while I was waiting."
Christy Lynn could feel Tamara peering furtively around the espresso machine, no doubt drawing her own conclusions about the key exchange she had just witnessed. She'd be sure to set her straight the moment Wade was gone. "Tolstoy asked me to thank you for the mice. He's crazy about them. In fact, he batted them around the house half the night."
"It's the catnip. It's like kitty pot. Makes them frisky and then really mellow."
"That explains a lot."
"You still look pretty tired. Did you manage to get some rest?"
"A little. I was up until 2, reading your manuscript." Wade winced visibly.
"And?"
"I made a lot of notes. We could go over them if you want, or we can wait until I get through the rest of the pages."
Wade scrubbed at the scruff on his chin with a pained expression. No time like the present, I guess. Are you free for dinner?
Dinner